this is Gina Zimbardi, and welcome to the second season of the NNGA podcast, Go Nuts. I'm here with Dr. Evan Brown, and we're here to chat about, well, just about a little bit about everything. First, can you introduce yourself?
Thanks for having me, Gina. This is Dr. Evan Brown. I'm professor of anthropology and sociology and down here at Joliet Junior College in Illinois, just outside Chicago. And my father and I, Dr. Lauren Brown, who's an emeritus professor of zoology at Illinois State University, we've been studying all sorts of things over the last several decades, namely for the interest of your listeners today, primarily around squirrels, pecan trees, black walnut trees, things like that. And I'm really excited to talk about that today.
Excellent. And for those of you listening, if you are an NNGA member, in the fall nutshell, that would be 73.3 2019, Dr. Brown and his dad published two articles, one on the winter survival of northern pecans and the other on the importance of scientific nomenclature.
Yeah.
There we go. That word, that was in my brain, and then it just, like, I couldn't remember how to say it. Of squirrels. So go ahead and check that out. You can check that out on our website or in the print copy. But anthropology, I would love to talk to you about that. But again, that would probably be an off stream thing. But just, I'm just a naturally curious person, so I just like to ask questions. So,
yeah.
Squirrels.
How
and why did you get interested in studying squirrels?
Well, it's a great question. So my father bought a large plot of land in central Illinois, just north of Hudson, Illinois, back in the late 60s. And right away, he started to plant a variety of trees, mostly nut-bearing, eastern walnut, northern pecan varieties, things like that. So that his children, as they grew up, would have an appreciation for nature and trees and all sorts of things. And that's just what happened. Growing up in the 80s and things like that, we were always working on planting, harvesting nuts, and generally being around all sorts of trees and things like that. And so we got interested in that. And very early on, I recognized the impact that squirrels and other creatures can have on you know, production and viability of our nut trees. And so back in the mid 80s, my father planted a grove of just 9 pecan trees that are doing all very well right now. But he did an excellent job of taking care of them. I helped him a bit. Of course, I was a bit younger. And we noticed right on away that we had, you know, some squirrel issues. And as many of your listeners know, there's not an abundance of silver bullets for this, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of led us to, now several decades later, writing this paper that thankfully was published in the Northern Nut Growers Association newsletter there. Essentially, there's a lot of difficulty in identifying exactly what the pests are. And our pursuit in this paper that we just published there was to help to narrow down what the possibilities are so that then later on we can help to align our efforts for eradication or at least addressing the issue more accurately. And I think that's at the central part of what we're talking about here. Obviously, we want to make sure that our trees are healthy, that they are producing what they need to produce, but also we clearly need to make sure that what is produced, we get as much as we can out of them. And that's where squirrels enter the equation. So often we've heard growers and others say tree squirrels, ground squirrels. And that's fine. It's understanding that these are an issue. But if we dissect that a bit more and get down to the very specifics of the issue, then we can help to identify potential solutions more accurately. Essentially, you know, as growers try and refine their businesses to make sure their profit margins are where they need to be. Every little bit counts. And this effort is hopefully one way in which we can do that. Now, this doesn't mean that there's necessarily solutions once you figure out the exact type of squirrel that you have or pests that you have, that doesn't mean we have the solutions, but it will at least help us to identify the physiology, the behavioral characteristics of that more accurately, so that then you can adjust your remediation and pest management practices better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. That makes perfect sense to me. And what I think is really interesting about this is that your story about your dad having this nut tree farm, it's a very common story in the Northern Nut Growers Association. And I've seen a lot of folks who, growing up with this tradition, went into studying trees and nuts. But what I think is really interesting is that you've approached it a little bit differently. You saw this as an opportunity to take a look at something more specific within kind of this ecosystem, and that specifically are the pests. And I particularly like this topic because I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and my alma mater is Kent State University. And if anyone knows anything about Kent State University, there's a weird abundance of black squirrels, which are it's irregular in this particular region. And that's because earlier in the 70s, Kent State actually was doing some research on squirrels and then decided to let them loose. And so now they have taken over the population. So I always have to chuckle when we talk about these things. But so, being in Illinois, what are the kind of species of squirrels you see in your area in regards to what's eating the nuts, or what do you see around?
Well, there's several types, and some are not as voracious as others. The biggest one that I have on my property right now, it's a mass consumer, is the eastern fox squirrel. This one, usually they're orange and yellow. They are quite large for a squirrel, but they could store thousands upon thousands of nuts in a season. I have a 1 acre, a small plot compared to many of your listeners, things like that. I have a lot of walnut trees as well as a few new pecan trees that aren't nut bearing yet. But I've got on this, just this 1 acre, easily a dozen eastern fox squirrels, and it's frustrating, I tell you what. We live right across from a forest reserve, and one of the things we found, and this is also done on my father's property, is even if you eradicate squirrels from a variety of ways, trapping, cats are actually quite good for some squirrels, things like that, you can't stop them. They just come right back. So you have to find different ways to address the issue, at least for now. Harvesting quickly when nuts fall, making sure that you're perhaps putting opportunistic bait out for them when you're anticipating a harvest, these types of things. That can help, but it's not eradicating at all. We have bird feeders too. I'm sure your listeners see this too. They consume it so much. And there's really innovative little contraptions you can make. And, YouTube offers a lot on that. But eastern fox squirrels around my area, just outside Chicago, they're a big one. And a surprising one is the southern flying squirrel. The southern flying squirrel is really quite... Northern flying squirrel is surprisingly voracious. We have a couple Osage orange trees right up the front of our property with a couple cavities in the middle of them. And they're nocturnal, so I don't see them during the day. I saw one at night a while back. But this cavity is just filled with nuts every fall. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, they're very plentiful on my property. Each individual squirrel doesn't eat a whole lot, but together, oh my goodness, they are really, really quite talented at it. So that's something that maybe some of your listeners aren't aware of, mostly because they are nocturnal. We don't see them during the day. This next year, I hope to actually get some hunting cameras, get some snapshots, get some more locations, maybe even put out another paper specifically more about them. They're a bit smaller than the fox squirrel, but and they have very unique chewing pattern. for fox squirrels, you'll see they'll just obliterate the walnut or other nut that they're chewing just into tiny little fragments. For flying squirrels, they actually chew, because their heads are much smaller, their musculature and their jaws are much smaller, they actually chew small arcs into the nut and then claw out the meat from in there. And so they're pea-sized, sometimes bigger, little gnaw marks in circular that make a hole there in the nut. A very, very different pattern than the fox squirrels that just, you know, chew the heck out of it. So this is another way to tell what type of species you have of squirrel. So if you see nuts on the ground that have little circular holes that's clear like something gnawed on it, you might have flying squirrels. Now another species that we've got to do more research on as a whole, everyone does, I think, is really the eastern chipmunk. Now these can crawl up trees, but they primarily are ground dwelling, and so they'll have nests on the ground in between logs and underneath various things like that. I have several on my property, and they do consume my walnuts, but they don't have a huge cache of walnuts. I haven't seen a mass amount of storage or anything like that. And the other thing is too that these chipmunks, there's a couple of things that make them not a voracious predator of nuts, is cats easily catch them. Other predators easily catch them. They can go up trees, like I said, but they aren't as quick or as wily as the fox squirrels and things like that. So the eastern chipmunks, while they can consume nuts, they don't appear, at least, to be a major nut consumer like the fox squirrels and certainly the flying squirrels. So those are the big ones. There are some others. There's the eastern fox squirrel. There's the red squirrel. Those are also nut consumers, kind of middle of the range. But the big nut consumers are the fox squirrel and the flying squirrel.
Yeah, very familiar with those. And chipmunks are very plentiful over here as well. So what advice do you have for nut growers that are interested in kind of determining the different types of squirrels they have on their property, or doing more research on these different species they have?
Well, there's lots of things you can do. I recommend, just as a start, buy a field guide to North American mammals. Peterson puts out great guides. There's other ones too. Any of them are fine, really. But look at the shells that are left. Try and get snapshots of them. Try and identify the coloration, the size, where they're located, their nesting, everything like that. Now, people listening to this are probably already aware of a lot of this, but they may know the coloration, they may know the location, everything like that. They may just not know the exact name for them, and that's fine. You know, a field guide can do that. So I would highly recommend field guide first. And again, Peterson does a great job at that. The internet is a wonderful tool as well. You know, depending on your area, especially on border distribution areas, you may be dealing with, well, especially the variation in color, different species. The ones that are frequently similar in color also have, you know, the fox squirrels that are similar, the eastern and northern, they're similar in color sometimes. And the gray fox squirrel, things like that, they are similar in color. And so while you may not be able to nail down the speciation exactly, their behavior is going to be very similar. And how you would potentially address this concern would be also similar. But it'd be very different if you're talking about a chipmunk versus a fox squirrel. So it's important to be able to determine what they are that way as best that you possibly can. And then, you know, as a last resort, if you're having just a pervasive problem, you can't figure it out and you want to address it accurately, certainly contact your local university. You know, mammalogists, zoologists will be happy to come out and give, you know, better idea of what's going on if you have a very difficult thing, like if you're around Kent State or other things like that. You know? So, yeah, absolutely. Those are some good resources.
Well, those are excellent, excellent resources. And I'm sure anyone tuning into this podcast, if they have nut trees, is going to be wanting an answer to this question, is how do you stop squirrels from eating your nuts? And I know you talked briefly about this, but I know that's the one thing that folks are going to be tuning in for. So can you give us some, give the folks some tips on how you might stop squirrels from ravaging the nuts?
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's the million-dollar question. What has been done in the past should still be done, but we've got a few concerns over the coming decades that we should really pay attention to. And it's not just a singular effort. This could be a great group effort from Northern Nut Growers Association. First, there's the traditional ones. Make sure you get your nuts as soon as you can, right after they fall. That's going to prevent them being taken by these pesky squirrels. There's also some interesting research about trying to make sure that we get the right stock that can drop nuts at the same time instead of having them on the branches for longer. That's still got, there's a lot of opportunity and growth there. I mean, if we could predict with pretty good accuracy when the nuts will drop, then we can, do what we need to. But I would say getting the nuts as quickly as you can. Second one, providing distractions for squirrels, namely in the name of other food. So if you have a pretty good idea of when the nuts are going to fall, provide an alternate food source just during that time. Some people say, well, provide an alternate food source year round so it never is an issue. That doesn't work because that just increases the population of squirrels. So we want to not help with the reproduction, right, and their family size, but also distract them right at the pinpoint of when they will be the most active and impactful for our nut crop. So corn, on pegs, things like that during that time can help, but make sure that that is not located in your grove. We don't want to draw squirrels to your grove. We want to draw them away from it and provide an alternate source of food. Now, what this does is it doesn't eliminate squirrels. It doesn't necessarily help them reproduce, although you don't want to keep the corn or whatever else you have for too long. You want to put it out right, before the nuts drop and pick it right up when you collect all the nuts. It should help a bit. Other ways you can have, we address in our papers, you can try and trap. You have to be very careful with that, however, because there are laws and regulations depending on the squirrel species. Some squirrel species are protected, and you should probably check with your Department of Natural Resources in your state or province that you live in to make sure that you're okay. And often most usually you have to have a permit to do so. You can hunt yourself, but then you have to worry about potential other hazards, buckshot in your trees, especially for our growers that after a tree has lived out their production years, sells the lumber, like especially for pecan, that's somewhat common. You won't be able to sell that if it has buckshot in it. So that's problematic. You could try and destroy their nests, but they're pretty smart creatures, so they'll just build another. So these other tactics to make their life difficult is good. But ultimately, it's getting the nuts before they do. That's going to be the most successful. And then going in the future, as I kind of led this part off, we've got to work more on the science and figuring out better stock to adapt to two things. One, these pests, but also climate change, making sure that, as we get more extreme weather events, our trees can survive, that they can produce and produce the amount that if we lose some, we're still be able to be in business. And then the other thing is doing more science on squirrel behavior, trying out a lot of things. If anyone has further ideas, this is a perfect avenue in which to share it. Talk to the Northern Nut Growers Association, work together. I know we already do, but keep coming up with ideas for this and identify the behavioral trends of this. And it'll help quite a bit. And also recognize other impacts on pests and being specific too. being specific with which species of squirrel in which area and what you're doing to try and address this. And even logging, you know, loss to specific species. I mean, we can narrow this down where we have a better chance of appropriating our efforts to eradicating the problem. Later this year, my father and I are going to write a paper on actually wild turkeys. Down at his farm, he's had actually an invasion, you might say, of turkeys eating a big amount. It's kind of funny in a way, but it's actually, they're very voracious too.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
So many. So we're going to talk a bit about that. And they have some really disgusting and unique ways of marking their areas and stuff like that. So I think in the short term, getting the nuts early. In the long term, identifying the behaviors and being more specific about the pests. And then as a group, trying to address this along with other pests and other concerns that we have as an industry going forward.
That's across the board, that's fantastic advice, and what you've provided. And I really like that you've given a specific call to action to our members and to listeners, because you're right. From what I've seen, I mean, I'm not an expert, and I'm not an expert on nut growing either, but what I've seen with squirrels and pests has been very anecdotal. So having a call to action for more rigorous or even just more scientific research, I think is a really good one.